Hey everybody, welcome to the Fight, Hustle, and Hurry podcast. Here we talk about the cultural pervasiveness and problem of hustle and hurry, and how as followers of Jesus, we can resist them in our daily lives. My name is Jeff Bethke, an author living in Maui, Hawaii, and I'm joined by John Mark Comer, a pastor and teacher at Bridgetown Church in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to season one. Welcome back, guys. Episode 6. So I think we're pushing now past halfway. What a treat. Hopefully you guys have been with us for the 6 weeks now or 5 weeks previously. We're so excited if you've been listening. We've been appreciating your guys' feedback. Today's episode, slowing down. Now this one, I'm really excited. I'm going to give John Mark most of the stage on this episode because he's brilliant on this. He's incredible on this. And in The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, there's an entire section dedicated to this concept of slowing down, which really, when I read it, I just was like, it sounds bad to say this, but there's a lot of books I read that they're really good, but you're like, oh yeah, I've kind of heard this over here, right? And I think the slowing down, you said it so singularly, where I thought it was very specific and very focused to a point where I hadn't heard it exactly like that, and I hadn't heard it as concentrated as exactly like that. So yeah, I'm really, really excited. But I mean, this one kind of is self-explanatory, but one thing we like to do is kind of talk about what do we mean when we say this. And maybe it's not self-explanatory, because do we mean just actual, like, you know, driving slower? Or do we mean our hearts? Do we mean our minds? What would you say you mean by this practice that we're going to talk about for the next 20 minutes of slowing down?
Yeah. So, I mean, okay, first off, by way of autobiography, none of this comes naturally to me. You know, I am type A, you know, or at least I was. I'm not sure who I am anymore. You know, I grew up in a family of kind of alpha male type A, a bunch of extended family that were all like, I can remember my dad and I used to brag about how fast we walk and how slow other people walk. And like, we'd be like Christmas shopping at the mall. I've like vivid memories.
Yes, I'm the same. Like everyone I ever Christmas go somewhere with, they're behind me. I'm never with them.
Absolutely. And it'd be like, come on, like we just, you know, suckers. We just passed, you know, 19 people at the mall, like on the way to Target for Christmas shopping or whatever, you know? So like all of that is in my blood. I used to work on staff at very large churches, and there's a very much a kind of hustle culture there at times, not all, but a lot of the time, you know? So all of this is counterintuitive to me and new to me. And it's a newer concept. It's actually an ancient concept, but newer language because, you know, if you pick up pretty much any, you know, book on the spiritual disciplines, and you read the kind of more standard list of silence, solitude, Sabbath, simplicity, fasting, confession, community, whatever, you don't find slowing on that list.
Yeah, none of them have to do with like pace or speed.
Yes, pace. And part of that is because it was far less of an issue until very recently. Now, I mean, literally until very recently in human history, the fastest anybody had ever gone had been on a horse. That was like
that is crazy to think about.
The fastest human speed. There was no, and then the train changed all of that. People were like, oh, I don't know how fast a train goes, but somebody sent us in on social media, I don't know, 40 miles per hour. I don't even know. But like a steam locomotive, like that was the fastest anybody had ever gone. And then eventually it was the automobile and now the airplane. And now we have internet and text messaging and like everything is at the speed of light, you know? Mm. And so a spiritual discipline or a practice is just anything that is based on the life and teachings of Jesus. Mm. So you could argue that nature walking is a spiritual discipline because Jesus would go out on walks in nature. You know, you could argue that eating bread is a spiritual discipline because Jesus would eat bread. Like it's anything that you see on the regular kind of day-to-day existence of Jesus of Nazareth. And when you read the Gospels, you pick up really fast that Jesus was not in a hurry. He was open to interruption. Mm. He was present to the moment. He would take a long time to travel from village to village. He'd stop and sit by a well and strike up a conversation with somebody while the disciples go get some food on the road. You know what I mean? He was just not in a hurry at all. So two of my favorite writers and teachers on spiritual formation, John Ortberg and Richard Foster, are the first ones that I'm familiar with that use this language of the spiritual discipline of slowing is what they would call it. Ortberg defines it as, quote, cultivating patience by deliberately choosing to place ourselves in positions where we simply have to wait. Mm. So it's an intentional, it's like a self-regulation where you choose to put yourself in a situation where you slow down and have to wait in order to like slow down your soul. So the basic theory is slow down your body and or slow down your mind and you slow down your life. So we're a holistic being. What we do with our body mm-hmm. is just as important as what we do with our mind or our relationships or whatever, right? So we're holistic. Our spirituality has to be holistic. So the basic idea behind the spiritual discipline of slowing is just like, how do I literally, you know, walking slower is a great example. How do I literally slow down my body? Contemplative prayer is another great example. How do I slow down my mind to just more fully inhabit the moment and be present to God, people, myself, all of that. And, you know, what I think that Ortberg gets in that definition of cultivating patience by deliberately choosing to place ourselves in positions where we simply have to wait is that great idea of like denying yourself what you want. Like yeah. this is fasting is a similar discipline. In fasting, of our own free will and deliberate intention, we choose to not give ourselves what we want. So that when somebody else chooses to not give us what we want, we don't react in anger. Right? So if you're always used to getting, this is like the spoiled child thing. If you're always used to getting what you want when you want it, then when somebody gets in your way, be it a parent or a babysitter, you're ticked off. Yep. How dare you? Right? Yep. And so fasting is a great thing. You regularly, of your own free will, you say, I'm not going to give myself what I want. I want food right now. And that way, when somebody else doesn't give you what you want in a work meeting or relationship doesn't give you what you want or your spouse doesn't bow to your preferences, you are used to not getting what you want and you're okay with it. Your happiness doesn't rise on fall on the fulfillment of your instant desires, right? Mm. So slowing is similar to that. It's choosing to place ourselves where we don't go the way of hurry and so that we can live in this way kind of all week long.
I love that. And I think one thing that I'm hearing you say is that it's something that kind of has to be, and again, like all these are practiced, but also like really kind of almost fought for is another better term. Like you have to really, I'm almost getting this picture of like throttling down something. We're trying to really throttle our spirits, our pace and everything down to a level that's more amicable to walking with Jesus. Another way to think about it is, I tend to have this thing where I'll sometimes look at things in life and try to resist the digital for the analog, right? There's even a good book on this, The Revenge of the Analog, and how this is even making a comeback from record players to all these different things, right? But it's not like, and I don't think digital is evil, and I have, like, I am a digital person probably more than anyone else because it's my job. I literally have, you know, I'm looking at three computers right here and four TV, you know, things and cameras, and like, I'm digital, but I practice certain moments throughout the day to get out a piece of paper when it would be faster to put it on my notes, right? Or I get out this when it would be faster to do this. And I think that's, you're almost saying that too, of like, we have to, you're trying to throttle yourself down, right? And the reason I'm doing that in the digital analog way is to throttle down the cultural kind of like pressure or wave that you can just get swept up in without realizing it. And so I think the speed and pace of life, you can get caught up in without realizing it. And slowing down is kind of this act of resistance, of throttling yourself kind of down, right? And when you were talking, I thought of that famous Dwight Eisenhower quote. I pulled it up because I was going to butcher it, even though it's really simple, where he says, you know, what is important is seldom urgent, and what is urgent is seldom important. And I think that's very close to kind of this, right? Of the,
yeah, go Ike.
You can't, there's things that are very important to Jesus, and there's things that should be very important to you because of that, that we actually are missing because we're so concentrated on the urgent or the hurried. And I just think that that dichotomy is really interesting. So what would you say to that? Or I know you have some really fun practical ideas on this one too, of just like, how do you do that? How do you throttle yourself down to a speed that's more conducive to walking with Jesus?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm guessing, you know, people hearing this, and in particular, if it's for the first time, it's easy to think, well, that just sounds inefficient or lazy or I won't get much done.
Yeah.
And the Eisenhower quote goes to the opposite. Like, you know, C.S. Lewis, spiritual director, once said that hurry never aids our work. It always impedes our work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think of the Polish journalist who nobody can pronounce his last name, but his book on flow.
Yeah.
And like how, like actually we're most productive when we're in this state deep of work, what he called flow, deep work, hyper-focus, calm, silent, quiet, like at our craft, whatever that craft is, you know, be it parenting to writing to poetry to woodsmithing to whatever, you know? And I actually, so this is where it's tied to simplicity, which we'll talk about, I think, in the next episode. But I'm actually more productive now than I've ever been. And I do less, I work less hours, I'm on, you know, but I'm ruthless, and no pun intended, about like my phone, my technology habits, computer habits, multitasking, blah, like all those things. Because actually, the more I slow myself down, I'm actually more efficient when I like move through at a calm pace, like tired, attentive to the moment. Like, and this isn't like a podcast about work efficiency, but I actually am more efficient and productive and get more done at work when I'm really calm. I mean, you know, we've all read the studies that multitask is a myth. Like there is no such thing as multitasking. Your brain literally can't multitask. Yep. It can only do one thing at a time. So what we call multitasking is just doing a lot of things badly by switching back and forth.
And like switching back and forth and then the brain residue and all
All that. And literally, you're, I mean, the way that the digital tech, you know, platforms are set up right now, it's like set up to do that, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I definitely think that people's fear is that inefficient, is it lazy, will I not accomplish much with my life? My experience has been the opposite. Like what we're trying to cut out is a lot of the extra unnecessary things. We'll talk about that maybe next time. But, and yeah, as far as like where to start, oh my gosh, like, you know, I made like a goofy little list of like 25 little like rules that I kind of play around with, not legalistic rules, but like fun gamification kind of rules.
Yeah.
I won't go through that whole list right now, but it's things like, you know, drive the speed limit and obey all traffic laws, like come to a full stop, you know, which is so hilarious. Or
that one's hard
get
for
in
me.
The slow lane, you know what I mean? Which is so weird. But actually, like, if you actually drive the speed limit, which I think most of us don't, and you come to a full stop and you like, it feels weird.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like your whole body's like, go, 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 you know?
Yep.
Or if you like get in the slow lane, sometimes I do this on purpose, like, and just rock it behind grandma in the Oldsmobile or whatever, you know, on purpose. It's like cars are flying past me on the left, you know? And it feels like I'm, but it actually has this bizarre calming effect on the soul, you know? Or like, you know, I'm the guy that's like literally angling at the stoplight. Like if there's three cars in one lane and two cars in the other, I change lanes to get in, you know what I mean? As if that's going to make any difference.
Yep.
Other ideas would be like get into the longest line at the checkout, you know, whether you're at the grocery store or wherever, and don't pull out your phone. Just be present to that moment. See how it feels, you know? And then there are all sorts, I have all sorts of kind of a rule of life around technology, things like I've turned my smartphone into a dumb phone as that goes kind of thing. And, you know, I parent my phone, meaning I put it to bed before I go to bed and it wakes up after I wake up. I'm its parent, not its child, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm pretty ruthless about TV and entertainment. You know, vacation is another big one for me. Like I'm a big believer, if at all possible, I know there's some privilege in this, but in taking as long a vacation as you can, like a shocking number of Americans across classes don't take much vacation, which is really interesting. 37% of Americans take fewer than 7 vacation days a year, which is crazy to me. And all the studies show that happiness levels peak on day 8 of vacation. So, because again, it's an entertainment culture. So most people I know use their vacation for like a 4-day weekend to go see Mumford & Sons down in San Francisco or whatever, like great stuff. But like not actually to rest and slow down and Sabbath and delight, you know? So I just have my little list and I put them in the book. I won't go through all of them, but I would encourage you just like have fun with this. Like get out a piece of paper, go analog, go old school, and a pencil or a pen. If you have a spouse or a girlfriend or a roommate, like do it together with your family and just make up like a list of little, you don't want to have to call them rules, call them little practices or ideas or games or whatever. And just do them like as you go through your day. Like recently, you know, I think this was a recommendation in Cal Newport's recent book, but he just said, try to run one errand a day where you don't take your phone with you.
Yes.
And it's been awesome. So like, just like if I can, I'll go on a run or I'll like whatever. I'll go out for coffee and I just won't take my phone. Yep. And the other day, like I sat and had a cup of coffee, and I didn't have a phone to look at, and I was alone. And it was the weirdest thing to just sit and drink my coffee. I was like, I mean, I was in a coffee shop, but I didn't know anybody there. And yep. I'm just sitting there drinking my coffee, no book to read, no phone. And it felt so weird.
Yeah.
But it was so like, as weird as it was, I just came awake to like the beauty of the city. And I found myself praying for the people around me and just being happy, you know, yes. like that's a great example of like the spiritual discipline of slowing. Get a cup of coffee, get it in a for here cup, you know, yes. not take away, and don't have your phone with you, and just sit and drink your coffee, you know, oh, stuff like so that. And, it can be anything.
Yeah. And I know I've tried to pursue that too. And what's interesting is it goes, the gamification of it goes the other way for you in a helpful way. Meaning like once you start leaving your phone at home, or like I'll put it in the trunk sometimes or leave it at home just for anything. When I'll go out, we'll go out to friends. We're going on a date now. We're going this. I just leave it, right? I just put it in a drawer. I almost treat it like a belonging, not like a thing that has to be on me. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And when you start doing that, you actually almost start getting addicted that way. Meaning like, I feel like yes. I almost want to go
That's
longer.
Me. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yes.
I like never want to have my phone on at all.
It's weird. There's like a little hump you have to get over, but yep. once you get over that, I will just let people know it's awesome, because then you do start your habit starts pushing you in the opposite direction, and it starts self-fulfilling itself, where now I just want to leave it. And I actually start to feel weird if it's with me all the time.
So
I think just leaning into that is kind of fun. And I think that gamification idea is really fun. Two things I want to say, and then I want to get your reaction, and you can kind of
yeah.
end with your reaction. I think the first thing I'll say is, and I wouldn't call these counterintuitive things, but I think we have to keep both these held in our mind. The first one is kind of like what John Mark was saying, is God has something big for you, and he has a call on your life. And how much are you missing that, or not having any ability to hear it because you're not slow enough to listen? Because when you live fast, by nature, you're more reactionary, right? And so you can't receive, you're more just kind of like bouncing. And so, man, what does God have for you that you're missing in that space by slowing down? But then two, I also think of the story, I forget where it's at, and you're the pastor, so you remind me, but it's the one where they break she breaks the perfume on Jesus's feet somewhere in the Gospels, right? And yeah. she just gets dominated from the Pharisees of just like that all that stuff. But a Watchman Nee book really impacted me probably 7 years ago now on that story, where, you know, you can say that was like a year's worth of wages of perfume and all these things. It was, for lack of a better term, what Watchman Nee says, it was deeply wasteful. Like, it was just extremely wasteful, actually. Like, we would never do that. We would never take a year's yeah. worth of something, right? $70,000 salary
critique.
Or something if you have
yeah,
a decent
job
here
could
in
have
a
been
city
spent
or something
on
like
poor.
That. And just wasted on the feet of Jesus, and then it goes away and it dissipates and it evaporates. We would not do that. Most of us would almost never do that. And he just says actually how that's such a perfect picture for how we actually should be for Jesus with our life. Meaning, like, you should actually waste yourself on Jesus. And I love that story, because I think of that story whenever I think of our culture's addiction to efficiency and doing big things for God, right? And doing all these huge things. And it's got to be this, and it's got to be that, and it's got to be that. And he just says, no, like, just waste yourself on him. Meaning meaning the culture will tell you sometimes when you're slowing down and living in the way of Jesus, that the way you're doing that looks wasteful and inefficient and wrong, and you're not capitalizing on your talents or your gifts. But man, I think Jesus looks at that sometimes and just says, man, there's no better honor than to waste yourself on Jesus in obscurity, maybe, or in slowing down. There's different ways you can do that. But I think, man, can you say that you are okay with that? Because I think so many times we want to hurry and we want to do big things for God, but sometimes God honors us wasting ourselves on him, if that makes sense. So yeah, I don't know if you have a reaction to that or what your thoughts are to both those things.
Yeah, I mean, my buddy Josh Gouten has this beautiful lyric in a new song, "Time's not wasted when it's wasted on you," you know? Mm. And I love that. And I could not agree more. And, you know, it's funny, economists are writing right now about the attention economy, meaning basically where all the billions of dollars being made by Facebook and Instagram and yep. all this stuff is on our attention, you know? And when we think about giving God our resources, most of us think about money. Some of us think about time. And then we begin to think about like attention, which is really yeah. like, for many of us, the greatest resource that we have to give. And so what does it look like to give to Jesus, not just our time and not even just our money, but our attention? And to give that as, for Mary, it was perfume, which was a resource. That was her precious resource. Yep. So our precious resource is time and money and attention. What does it look like to give not just our money through tithing or whatever, but or generosity, but our time and our attention to Jesus as an act of worship? And just like, because we're so in love with the beautiful being that is God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit. And just our heart is just overwhelmed by love and gratitude and adoration, like that the worship is the center of the Christian life, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I agree. But then again, my only comeback would be, I still think it's a myth that you're less efficient. I mean, that's the crazy thing.
Yes, like, I agree with that.
I just think there's very little that can be done without, with hurry, that can't be done better without it. Yes. Like almost any task I can think of out of work, efficiency, if it's relationships are just not efficient at all. If it's work-based, if it's anything, there's so few things I can think of that aren't done better when I'm not in a hurry. And when I say not in a hurry, I don't mean lazy or slothful or distracted. No, I just mean calm,
you mean methodical,
present,
thoughtful, yeah.
Flow, yeah, thoughtful, bringing my full self to one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So in a sense, you know, like, in the book, I put just these four that I think we're starting with, four practices of Jesus that for me are the most helpful for slowing my life down, which are silence and solitude, Sabbath, slowing, and then the next one we'll talk about in the next episode is simplicity. And all of those practices are practices of withdrawal. So, you know, Willard and Foster and others talk, they kind of categorize some spiritual disciplines as disciplines of engagement, meaning they're things we do. And other disciplines as disciplines of withdrawal or abstinence, meaning they're things we don't do, right? Yeah. So like study of scripture, it's a discipline of engagement. You open your Bible, you get out the podcast or the book or the commentary, you study, you engage, you do this thing. Sabbath or others is almost like a discipline of abstinence, like you don't work, you know what I mean? Like you just rest and it's about ceasing. And, you know, feasting or celebration, that's a discipline of engagement. You go throw a party, celebrate, think about. Fasting is a discipline of abstinence, like you choose to go without food. So I think in the modern world, this is especially true if you're in a city or a metropolitan area, or if you're a careerist person where a lot of people get their sense of identity and meaning and purpose in life from their work, which I know is not all of you listening, but especially I live in a city. So in a city, basically people's time is full of work, or adult forms of entertainment. They're, you know, like cities like Portland are basically like, you know, children's gyms for 20-somethings and 30-somethings. So people are either working really hard and or playing really hard. And so spiritual disciplines in a culture like that, where there's a phone, people are busy in a career or just busy with city life, or maybe for you it's just busy with three-kid life or church life. Some of the most important spiritual disciplines for us are disciplines of abstinence. They're not about things we need to do because we're already doing all these things, often vocational things that matter and make a difference in the world. It's a little bit more about we need to focus really on things that we don't do, you know? And so slowing, it's interesting. Silence and solitude and Sabbath are my two anchor practices, like at for emotional health and spiritual life. I can't. Like if I miss a day without my morning quiet time, I feel it. If I miss 1 week without Sabbath, I feel it like at a deep level, you know, far more so than if I miss fasting on a day or whatever. You know, I really, these are my anchor spiritual disciplines. I don't want to create a hierarchy of spiritual disciplines, but for me, these are like anchor, you know, at least for emotional health and spiritual life. Slowing is just like a little mini portable silence and solitude or Sabbath. Like just, let me just turn this tiny little, like just sit in line, this little, like just sit and have a cup of coffee, this little, just, you know what I mean? Like chew my food longer, which is this thing that Michael Pollan got me onto. That's hilarious. You know, this little, let's not eat out, let's cook in, like just these little ways to like, just come back to live from a place of just restfulness in the love of God and in prayer. I mean, I really think that prayer is just a form of rest, of just resting in God and letting God rest in us, is what John Vanier called it. I love that definition.
Yeah, I think, oh, I love that. And we'll end with that, you guys, because that's so true. I think it's, what I'm almost hearing you say is that slowing down is the, or what I think is true, is that slowing down is almost the portal to some of the next ones. Not that there's a hierarchy, yes, but it is, it's the thing that will set your tone. Slowing down sets the tone for some of the other spiritual disciplines to actually go deep and rich in the soil. And so what would it look like for you guys
today? Let me say one last thing.
You what?
Let me say one last thing. Just to quote Ortberg again, because I feel like if we were getting paid for this, he should get royalties.
Yes, exactly. But we got to quote him.
He said the best thing. He's a golfer. I'm not a golfer. But he said, you know, golf doesn't take that long to figure out in your head like what it is you have to do. Mm. So golf's all about getting what's in your head down into your body, into your muscle memory, where it just comes out of you. And he said, that's basically what following Jesus is. He said, it doesn't take that long to get it into your head. Really, what discipleship is about is getting it from your head down into your body and your muscle memory. Mm. And I just don't think that people have a holistic, most people I chat to don't have a really holistic view of spirituality as an embodied thing. Like your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, not your mind, your body.
Yep.
Your body is the house where God's presence is. You meet God in your body. This is like Pauline New Testament theology to the core. So people think of spirituality as something we do outside of the body rather than something we do in or even with our body. It's why most Western Europeans have no concept of fasting, because fasting is a way that we connect with God through our stomach, not through our mind. And that's just like, so like this, we've been through the Enlightenment. We don't do that anymore, exactly. You know? But like what that discipline gets right, and that's a separate thing, but is embodied spirituality. Mm. And so, man, if nothing else, if you hear nothing else, like what you do with your body, your mind, your time, your money, your attention will set the tone for all of your emotional and spiritual life with Jesus and other people.
Mm. Amen. We're ending with Ortberg right there, you guys. I got nothing more to say. That was so good. So we'll see you guys next week.